This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. Glad you could be with us on this Friday morning. It's the last day of February, and again, the weather is spectacular. We know we'll pay the price. That's okay. Hopefully, you got out and enjoyed it a little bit yesterday, and we'll see what happens. I think we're getting back into the 30s overnight, if
great.
I saw that correctly. Isn't that great? How are you feeling, Kim?
I'm okay. I'm a little froggy. I'm just trying to kick this cold or whatever I have, but, you know, we're hanging in there.
Both a little froggy. You know, Ethan asked me yesterday when I walked in, he goes, maybe you're allergic to something in the building when you get here in the morning. And I'm like, well, maybe. Maybe it's work. I don't know.
Me? I came back and you sounded froggy.
I'm allergic to work. I don't know exactly.
No, he was froggy while you were out,
too.
Yeah. A little froggy. It's usually in the 5 o'clock hour, and by around 6 o'clock, it works its way out.
It's unnecessary meetings.
I think a lot of people are allergic to unnecessary meetings.
I'm not quite sure if we should talk about that or not. No, we had to have a meeting yesterday about employee engagement, so everybody had to be there, but nobody seemed real thrilled about being there. That's pretty funny.
Well, the good thing was it was about a half hour shorter than what we were anticipating, and that is always a win.
Amen.
And Mark and I were 25 minutes late.
So you guys were there for 5 minutes, so it was a real short meeting for both of you.
Carl and I were recording a program, and we walk in, and I swear 8 minutes later the meeting was over. I'm like, we should do this every time. this timing was perfect. I barely sat down. My chair barely got warm before the thing was over with. But, yeah, good. You know, last night, day before yesterday, I had an opportunity to go over and watch the check presentation for Guns N' Hoses. And last night, the Guns N' Hoses organization had its banquet where they celebrate what they did for the year. You know, Carl, you should have been there. Open bar, a nice spread of food down at Andre's in Fenton.
Ooh. Yeah. I like that place.
It was the food was great. The company was great. So our friend Julie Tristan down there. Of course, Colonel Larry O'Toole, who's now running Backstoppers. All of the folks who, you know, I ran into down there, just fantastic people. And I can't say enough about the organization. And here's the thing about it. This room was filled with, I don't know, 400 people, maybe. I mean, it's a big room down there, and there are like two people in that room who get a salary. I may be exaggerating that. There may be three out of the 400. Everybody else who works on that is a volunteer, and that's why they can turn $1 million over to Backstoppers every year that they do Guns N' Hoses.
Yeah, that's respectable.
It's
something that people can really get behind. You know, it's a good cause, and you feel good when you know you're volunteering for an organization that's actually making a difference in so many people's lives.
Well, they did a fantastic job, and the St. Louis police officer Eva,
Eva Millar.
Yeah, she sang the national anthem last night, and she did a fantastic job. And somebody told me they were going to send me, I gave them my phone number, they said they recorded it and they were going to send it to me so we could play it this morning, and they never sent it. So I don't have it to play for you, but she crushed it.
I've seen her before.
Well, she's the one who sang at the Guns N' Roses event itself.
I believe so.
Yes, and that I would have heard her.
And she sang at the inauguration for the governor this year.
Nice.
So she did a fantastic job, and she's like working on her PhD.
Casual.
We learned last night. So
as we all are, you know, who isn't working on their PhD? I'm working on my doctorate. When I get off work here, that's what I'm doing.
As you're policing.
That's right. I do police work. I forgot to mention that. Thank you, Carl.
When I got off work, I'm working on my nap. So that's very impressive. But shout out to all those people at Guns N' Roses for the great work they do. And you know, we're right at the end of the second month of the year, and they're already hard at work on what they're doing next November. And I think that's just fantastic. They're raising $1 million a year on average now for the fine folks at Backstoppers. So thanks to all of you and all that you do for our first responders. And speaking of which, today is the last day of the month. And under normal circumstances, today's the day I'd be going out to deliver food to a first responder organization, which we have selected for the month based on the fine recommendations people have sent in and the nominations they've sent in for individual first responders. The problem is Tony Stone, Grillmaster Tony, has unfortunately suffered a death in his family, and he is out of town right now. So we're going to end up delivering that food next week sometime. So I'll have an announcement on that coming up when we get it scheduled. But condolences to Tony and his family, and hope they have peace getting through all this for sure. We've got a great show for you today. Lots of stuff. Remember a couple of weeks ago, I had local attorney Mark Cantor from Cantor Law in here. He has he travels, sometimes a couple times a year over to Israel to volunteer, like working at food banks and food lines and volunteering. And I mean, it's pretty selfless work what they go over there and do. This group of 20, 30 people from the St. Louis area who travel over there. He's there this morning. He was getting ready to leave a couple of weeks ago. And in the meantime, we know that the Hamas terrorists returned the bodies of those two babies, not their mother. And we find out after the fact that they were choked to death, not killed by bombing as they originally claimed. So that news has broken since he last talked to us. He's in Israel, and we're going to talk to him this morning, a little over an hour. And it's about 6:20 this morning he's going to phone in. It's 8 hours later there, so it's the middle of the afternoon in Israel. But we're going to talk to Mark Cantor about the feelings over there, whether or not they're the belief there is that they'll move into the second stage of the ceasefire. I don't know what the latest is on that, but Mark will give us an update here at about 6:22. Congressman Eric Burleson is going to be joining us today at about 7:35. That's going to be good. I'm going to get you an update on SAPA, the Second Amendment Preservation Act. The Missouri Firearms Coalition is pushing that hard. That is a new version of that act. A number of police leaders are opposed to it. They want some wording changed in it, and we're going to have Chief Steve Lewis on a little later from the city of Ellisville to explain in his words what his concerns are about that legislation. So all that for you coming up right now, Carl. Are we getting to the fray? Who do we have this morning?
We're going to do the short list. Oh, but yeah, we'll do the fray. We'll do the short list on the other side.
Yeah, we'll do that when we get back.
The Mark Cox Short List.
And I will use the term gaslight, because that's what they were doing. The campaign, former colleagues, the message to everybody was to make sure that you tell people, it's too early, it's too early.
The truth is starting to come out. First, the Jake Tapper revelation, even though they covered up Joe Biden's mental decline, he's writing a book about it. And now a member of Joe Biden's staff is talking about the gaslighting and the cover-up of his slow walk into dementia.
The last time I've watched the news
don't rub it in
was January 20th when I was at the White House. I've not watched the news.
Aw, KGP has put the binder away, and she doesn't want to know what's going on in the Trump administration. Like so many of these liberals, she has stuck her head in the sand. Not that she had to bend over very far to do that, but that's the deal. She's not watched any media since she left the White House.
I do not invoke the specter of Nazis lightly, but I know the history intimately and have spent more time than probably anyone in this room with people who survived the Holocaust.
There is not a bigger blowhard in America than J.B. Pritzker, who once again yesterday accused Donald Trump of being a Nazi.
President Trump is blessed with the dumbest opposition. Mm. Right? They cannot figure out what they're get their footing, and part of it is what Jesse said, is that their media operation has collapsed.
Dana Perino, she goes, one of Donald Trump's strengths is that he has the dumbest enemies on earth. And I think maybe she's onto something there when you think about how they react to everything. It's the 80-20 thing we talked about. Whatever the opposite is of what Donald Trump wants is what the left embraces. And they're on the losing end of all of it. They are. I mean, how Donald Trump is dangerous. He called Vladimir Zelensky a dictator. Guess who's going to arrive at the White House today, hat in hand, begging to sign an agreement to give the U.S. half of all future revenue from any valuable minerals found on his land?
Yeah.
Vladimir Zelensky. Mm-hmm. Clearly, they're a lot more worried about it than Vladimir Zelensky.
Yeah. No, it's true. You know what I found interesting? By the way, it was a nothing burger, the whole Epstein file thing, right? You see the pictures of them with the binders walking out. This is it. This is it. And then I heard that they released it to a select number of conservative media outlets, which I'm sure the mainstream media like the ABC News and lost their minds saying how ridiculous that was.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually dug through a little bit of it last night, and my first thought was, wait a minute, I've seen all this before. Like the flight logs. The flight logs were in there that showed Alan Dershowitz on a couple of flights with Epstein. This is like, these flight logs ranged from 1993 up to like 2004, the ones I looked at. And Alan Dershowitz was on there a couple of times, And I didn't see Bill Clinton's name on, although it could have been there because there were literally hundreds and hundreds of pages of flight logs released. I didn't get through all of them.
And a lot redacted.
Well, and that, I knew
some
it.
Some were redacted, but those were victims, I think. I think those were underage victims. Well, I think they were.
We don't know anything.
Don't put it past people.
And Donald Trump's name was on there a couple times with his family. So the important thing about the flight logs is, as you look at it, it shows which airport they flew to. The flights with Donald Trump on them, particularly the flights with Donald Trump and his family on them, were not to Epstein Island. I mean, I think the mistake people make when they assume that all these flight logs are his private jet flight logs. I've got them here that I printed out. For example, the ones with Trump were from Palm Beach to New York, or New York to Palm Beach and back and forth, not to Epstein Island or wherever the hell that was. They had to fly into one island and then take a puddle jumper or something over to Epstein Island or take a boat or something like that. Land on the island.
Trump wouldn't be stupid enough to release the files his name was on it that he went to Epstein Island multiple times.
Right, but I'm just saying somebody's got to dig through these who understands who the initials are and tell us who these people are. Because in a lot of cases, it'll say J.E. for Jeffrey Epstein and then C.L. or M.G. for or G.M. for Ghislaine, whatever
Maxwell.
Her name is. Maxwell.
We need like a little log that you used to have in high school.
You do. You need a code, to know who the initials are. So I thought it was pretty interesting because, you know, she announced, Pam Bondi announced on Jesse Waters' show that it's coming. I'm going to release them sometime tomorrow. It's on my desk. Get ready. And then it seemed like a nothing burger. This is what Waters' reaction was it last night. And then he read the letter that Bondi has now issued to Kash Patel. There are apparently thousands of other documents that were not given to her. So listen.
The masseuse's names were blacked out, and the information from the flight logs wasn't new. Neither was the Rolodex. When we began to feel duped, Pam Bondi released a letter that says, basically, I was duped too. In the letter addressed to FBI Director Kash Patel, Bondi basically says, I asked you for the full and complete files related to Jeffrey Epstein. I received 200 pages of documents. I asked if these were all the documents, and the FBI said yes. Late yesterday, I learned from a source that the FBI field office in New York was in possession of thousands of pages of documents related to the investigation and the indictment of Epstein. Despite my repeated requests, the FBI never disclosed the evidence of these files. Bondi's demanding by 8 a.m. tomorrow morning that the FBI deliver everything to her office, including all records, audio, video recordings, all materials related to Epstein. And she ensures DOJ will disclose everything.
Wow. So by 7 a.m. Central Time this morning, if that letter is followed, all the rest of the stuff will land on her desk.
I'm just still not holding my breath over this. I feel like this is what happens, is they get us all excited thinking there's going to be some groundbreaking new development, and then it's just not much.
Well, here, I mean, it's one of two things, right? It has to be one of two things. Either Pam Bondi has just become a victim of the deep state, which is possible. I mean, she's been a she's been a state prosecutor. She's been a state attorney general. She's never been a federal attorney general. She might have assumed that when she said something, it was law and everybody was going to follow it. And that's not how it works in the federal government. And that's one thing the Trump administration and DOJ and all that is, they're trying to purge some of those lifers who do what they want, regardless of who's in charge. You can't get away with that stuff anymore. Either that or Bondi had the documents on her desk, and she's a 30,000 foot person, and she assumed everything was in there and didn't read it herself. Because if she had looked through the 200 pages, however many there were, she would have realized there's nothing new here.
Don't you think one of her staffers would have done that? Surely she doesn't have the time herself, but her staffer should have looked through it.
Because it is a lot of egg on your face to stand up and say, I've got the evidence and I'm giving it to you. And then you look at it and go, but what am I looking at? And why are all these black lines on the paper with names that were redacted? Now, my assumption automatically was that they said they were trying to protect victims. Kim's default assumption was that those might be officials whose names they didn't want to get out there. And that's possible, too. I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. I really don't. Coming up, we will get to Kim on a whim. Next hour, we're going to go live to Israel and check in with our friend, attorney Mark Cantor. Stay tuned.
Kim on a whim.
So for the first time in 15 years in the United States, an inmate is going to be executed with a firing squad. This is happening in South Carolina. The guy's on death row for brutally murdering his ex-girlfriend's parents back in 2001. And this is something that has been controversial, the firing squad. And that's why it has not been allowed for 15 years. In fact, I was doing some research on this here in Missouri. And it said that there had been an inmate who had requested to be executed in that way back in 2021, Ernest Johnson. And supposedly he had brain damage and epilepsy and believed that the firing squad would be less painful than lethal injection, which is arguably the most common way people are executed. Well, anyway, the U.S. Supreme Court denied that request. I just think this is very interesting. You know, as a journalist, Mark, we've probably covered these. I have covered many of them, especially when I was working as a reporter in Nashville, Tennessee. There was one gentleman who chose to be executed with the electric chair. And as a reporter, well, you have witnesses for all these executions, and you're given little journals and little notepads, and you basically go sit in these chairs. I declined the offer. I did cover it from outside the jail, but I opted to not actually be there to watch it. Anyway, you have these little notebooks. And basically what I was told was that this curtain goes up and there's a glass window and you see the inmate sitting there, whether it's electric chair or lethal injection, and they carry it out. And as a witness, you are expected to document everything. There's a clock. you note the time, you note different things you see, like, oh, he took a breath here, or he did this, or he did that.
He briefly flopped like a dead fish.
Right, well, yeah, and you know, you'll talk about the last words they said, like in that case with the electric chair. This is kind of eerie to me. The guy's last words, "Let's rock." That's what he said. So this guy, Brad Sigman, is the South Carolina inmate's name, and firing squad. And only 5 states, I believe, even have this as an option. And I wonder if things could change under Donald Trump. Could he allow other types of executions? Because they claim that the lethal injection is really painful. In fact, listen to part of this report I found talking about this and his concerns, his attorney has concerns about that way of
his execution. Attorneys argue the state's execution methods are inhumane. They say lethal injection has led to prolonged deaths and the electric chair would, quote, burn and cook him alive. His legal team, though, has one final appeal. They're hoping to stop the execution and push for a sentence of life without parole.
That's what I've heard, that it can be really painful. They say it can take more than 20 minutes, supposedly, if you use the method of lethal injection. It can feel like burning alive.
I mean,
no one will really know.
Cry me a river. I don't have a lot of sympathy for that. And here's the thing about the death penalty, and the reason that if we're not going to do it better than we do it, and this will make the opponents of the death penalty very happy, then we should just do away with it, which is their goal here anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The goal of having a death penalty, which I think should be automatic for anybody accused of injuring a cop, a first responder, killing them, I think it should be automatic. If you are responsible for the death of a police officer because you drive drunk, or you're an illegal alien and you hit Officer David Lee on the side of the road and kill him, whether it was intentional or not, you should be up for the death penalty. I believe that. But the only way it works as a deterrent is if it gets carried out quickly and efficiently, because now people have no reason to believe that's going to happen to them, because they'll go through years and years of appeal, getting 3 hots in a cot, and they'll get these left-wing, bleeding-heart liberal attorneys who will try to convince the world that this is somehow cruel and unusual, mm-hmm. unlike the pain and suffering of the person they murdered.
Right.
I don't have a lot of sympathy for them. Here's what I think. They ought to do this more often, and they ought to do it publicly, not 5 people in a room witnessing it. Let the public crowd gather and watch it. Then it becomes a deterrent. Right now, it's not a deterrent. It happens so infrequently that nobody who's thinking about committing a crime like that stops to think, wait a minute, I could be put to death for this.
Yeah.
Because odds are they won't.
Well, they used to do years and years and years ago, like public hangings.
They did.
And maybe firing squad. I don't know. I do know that these death penalty cases, if you're on death row, it is incredibly expensive, because there are so many appeals. And I get that. I mean, you have to obviously make sure that you have the right person for that crime if you're putting someone to death. I do support the death penalty. I don't feel as bad for the inmate. Because, you know, you think about these cases and it's not like the person who's being put to death is somebody who, you know, like, just hit somebody with a car. I mean, this is like the worst of the worst, right? Somebody who brutally murdered somebody. In fact, I was watching the Gabby Petito documentary on Netflix last night, and that whole story, I forgot about the details of it, and it's so sad. And he ended up killing himself. Her boyfriend did. But that's the kind of thing where if he were to be put to death by lethal injection, and it did feel like he was burning alive, I don't feel that bad, because it's not like Gabby Petito or the other victims got to be like, you know what, actually, this way you're about to murder me, it just feels a little too painful. Could I instead opt to have you kill me this way, please? They didn't get a choice. In some of those cases, they had to endure the most gruesome, brutal, painful death possible. So why should then the suspect be like, you know what, actually, I think this is a little bit too painful, I'd like to do this instead.
Yeah. Well, the last, I believe the last public hanging in the United States was in the early 1900s, like around 1920, maybe 1918, 1936. According to one report I've read here, it was in 1936 in Owensboro, Kentucky. And they don't do that anymore. But if you ever watched one, that would be the last thing you would want to happen to you. And in terms of whether it's a firing squad or an electric chair, it needs to be a deterrent if we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's just a shot in the dark. Pardon the pun. Whether it's the firing squad or Old Smokey. Do you remember Old Smokey?
Vaguely.
Old Smokey was the nickname they gave to the electric chair in the state of Florida because sometimes it would malfunction.
Oh.
And I'm sure at that point, sort of like the Green Mile, that would be a little uncomfortable if they forget to wet the sponge that they stick on the top of your head.
Mm-hmm.
And it was they left that chair like that for a long time to strike fear in the hearts of the people that might be getting the death penalty. I don't know what they do these days. Maybe they do lethal injection down there now. But I just don't. I covered a case in South Carolina that was so heinous. A guy who came to the outside of a Walmart basically tried to carjack a woman who was very brave and basically scared him away. And he went around the back of the place and he found two young sisters who had just arrived to go shopping, and he ordered them out of the car onto the ground on their knees, and he shot them both execution style. And they found him, and they tried to argue that he was borderline mentally
that's always the defense
ill or whatever, you know,
not fit to stand trial and insanity.
They tried all of this stuff. I covered his trial. That none of that was true, and he got the death penalty.
Yeah,
right. This would have been 1990, maybe 91, and 10 years later, I'm working in St. Louis as a TV reporter, and I get a phone call one day from like some private lawyers group, volunteer lawyers, the Justice League or something they called themselves, where they were still working on this guy's case, and they wanted me to come and testify that he seemed doped up or something during the trial. And I'm like, you got the wrong guy. I would pull the lever on this guy. I don't. You're barking up the wrong tree.
Mm-hmm.
Go talk to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the whole trial. I watched his testimony. I watched all of that. He did what he did intentionally, and he doesn't deserve to be walking on earth or still getting three hots and a cot at the local prison, in my opinion.
I would support being tortured? I mean, I'm talking like individual fingernails pulled off and tortured. Hamas.
Ouch.
Hamas, the things that Hamas has done to these women and children, men of course too, but in particular these women and children you were just talking earlier this morning about.
Oh, the Bibas family, yes.
Yeah, the strangulation and the torture that they've gone through being held in captivity for over a year, I cannot imagine. And
I agree.
I don't think that they have any empathy. You know, some of the inmates you'll see when you've covered trials, I'm sure, Mark, you know, they're breaking down and they're apologizing. And there are some where, man, there's nothing. There is nothing there. And I just, you don't think that they have any remorse, that if they had the opportunity to do it all again, they would take it.
Wow.
So it'll be interesting. This firing squad, is this something that is going to be happening more and more? People choosing that as the talk of the lethal injection method is said to be really painful? I don't know.
Who knows? Nobody knows.
We will find out.
Because we can't ask anybody who's been through it. So how would we know?
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, they talk about them being botched, but the whole point is they'll do it again. They're going to put that person to death.
Correct.
It's just a matter of how many times, I guess, it takes to actually do it.
That's right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more about the fact that Vladimir Zelensky's on his way to the U.S. today. Maybe he's here already. I don't know. He's meeting with the president today. And in the meantime, a bunch of former deep staters have come out and signed a letter to Congress fighting President Trump. Surprise, surprise. We're going to get to that when we come back in just a minute. Stay tuned. All right. So far, hats off to Ethan Bright, who, of course, won Real or Fake and got to pick the music for today's show. Carl, who is this again?
This is Missouri's own Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats.
Ah. I know I've heard the song before. I just can't remember where or why.
Their band is called something something in the Night Sweats.
Well, it's his name, Nathaniel Ratliff.
And the Night Sweats.
And the Night Sweats. Ooh. You know, the
Very
Doors
fitting
were
for
taken.
Me with pregnancy, because I've dealt with that. Maybe I need to start listening to them.
And that's not all, right,
oh,
that you've dealt with.
They have a great song that we cannot play on the radio. It's called SOB.
Oh, really?
Huh.
SOB, Bring Me a Drink. Fantastic song.
Sounds lovely.
It is a great song. I've wanted to play it at hockey games so many times, but I can't.
I'm just thankful that Ethan didn't pick all heavy metal. Thank you, Ethan.
There'll be some harder.
There's a few, I'm sure, coming.
It's not too late to change your mind if you have any heavy death metal playing later on in the show.
I already got it all loaded up.
So there's a story today in the Post Disgrace about three federal agencies. This is these are the death row, so to speak, Kim, of the deep state, and the pain of watching a fish that you've just caught laying on the ground flopping before its demise. They've announced the closing of three St. Louis area federal agencies this week. DOGE claims the closures listed on its wall of receipts will save the federal government $306,000 annually. All three were for offices of less than 5,000 square feet. One of the agencies, the Defense Counterintelligence Agency, let me see here. What has happened? Uh-oh. All right. Well, that kind of went away on me. I don't know.
I have it pulled up. You're talking about the Channel 5 article saying the Defense Counterintelligence and Security Agency office, I guess it had an $85,000 annual lease. Federal
right.
mediation and let's see. Yeah, so three different offices.
Yeah, and they're going to close down. One was already slated to shut down anyway. And you know, I'm thinking to myself, we all have bosses. Unless you are a business owner and you're your own boss, and there's plenty of people out there listening to the show who are, even if you are, you've probably worked for somebody at some point, and you have certain expectations with that. Now, you may have a better relationship with your boss than somebody else, but at the end of the day, if your boss tells you to do something, you're expected to do something. That's the amazing thing about the attitude towards some of these government by some of these government employees to what's happened to them here, right? So I found this soundbite from this government employee. Her name is Anna Mosterak. She went on social media after finding out that she had to reply to this email with five things she had done the week before. And she was so offended by that somebody thinks they're in charge of me. Like, she apparently, in the federal government, you can walk around and feel like you don't have to answer to anyone. Listen at the disgust in her voice as she explains this here.
As federal employees, asking us to report five things that we accomplished last week. I'm not worried about my five things. I have plenty of things to report. I did plenty of work last week. But the feeling of just like absolute existential dread that I felt typing out a response to that email is something that I wish I could convey to everyone, because it felt like such a glimpse into the reality that they are trying to create. And it was terrifying. It felt like you will do what I say or else.
Well,
your boss might say to you, you'll do what I say or else. Do you not ever feel that way? Like, you may not like the task that you're assigned, but if your boss tells you, I want this report on my desk by the end of business tomorrow, you don't go shoot a video saying, I felt existential dread that my boss said you will do this or else.
Something tells me she will not be keeping her job. What I thought Elon Musk said was that wasn't as much about truly getting five things that people had done. It was more of a pulse check.
To find out if anybody's checking their email.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you actually doing anything? Because I bet that was very alarming. Well, maybe not, but how few people actually even responded to that in a timely manner.
It got worse for Anna. She continued her meltdown, and I had to edit this for language. So here it is.
And the feeling that I felt responding to that email was such a glimpse into a possible future here. It felt so scary and so heartbreaking. It felt much like I would imagine living in a place like what I always imagined North Korea to be like, would be like, where the energy is, yes, master, your wish is my command.
You know what? I would say that's very North Korea-esque.
Oh, I would think. Your wish is my command. Or she's in I Kim Dream Jong, of Genie, one of the two.
Kim Jong-un at gmail.com. Is that who she was asked to send a response
know.
To?
I don't know. I mean, I do have empathy for people that would lose their jobs. But
I do too.
To freak out like that and think that you were untouchable? Did you really think that because you had a job with the federal government, you were just going to work there forever with no possibility of any changes? I mean, that speaks to a big problem with our federal government, actually, that she didn't have a boss she felt like she had to answer to up until now. Well, guess what? There's a new sheriff in town. All right, coming up, Attorney Mark Cantor live from Israel this morning with the situation on the ground there. We'll talk to him about 6:20.
Get more at 971talk.com.